Merlin and the prince were dining, just the two of them for the moment. Baskin had been making half-hearted small talk since Merlin's arrival, but it was plain that there was really only one thing on his mind, and he was straining to have an answer.
"My staff say that you were very busy," he said, "making all sorts of use of our facilities. Did you, by any chance..."
Merlin smiled sweetly.
"By any chance, arrive at a conclusion concerning the matter at hand?"
Merlin tore into his bread with rude enthusiasm.
"The matter? The Syrinx, Merlin. The Syrinx. The thing that's kept you occupied all day."
Merlin feigned sudden and belated understanding, touching a hand to his brow and shaking his head at his own forgetfulness.
"Of course, forgive me, Prince Baskin. It always was really just a formality, wasn't it? I mean, I never seriously doubted your honesty."
"I'm glad to hear that." But there was still an edge in Baskin's voice.
So, is it real, or is it not real? That's what you set out to establish, isn't it? Oh, it's real. Very real."
Merlin looked at his host with a dawning understanding.
"Did you actually have doubts of your own, Prince? That had never occurred to me until now, but I suppose it would have made perfect sense. After all, you only ever had the Shrike's word that the thing was real. How could you ever know without using it?"
"We trade, Merlin. For 1300 years, we trade."
"But it's settled, then? You'll accept the Syrinx in payment? It really isn't much that I'm asking of you, all things considered."
"If you really think this bag of tricks will make all the difference, then who am I to stand in your way?"
Baskin beamed.
He stood and recharged their glasses from the bottle that was already half empty.
"You do a great thing for us, Merlin. Your name will echo down the centuries of peace to follow. Let's just hope the Gefurians hold it in the same high esteem."
"Oh, they will. After a generation or two under our control, they'll forget there were ever any differences between us. We'll be generous in victory, Merlin. If there are scores to be settled, it will be with the Gefurian High Command, not the innocent masses. We have no quarrel with those people."
"And the brigands?
You'll extend the same magnanimity in their direction? There'll be no need. After you've taken back the tactician, they'll be a spent force, brushed to the margins."
Merlin's smile was tight. "I did a little more reading on them. There was quite a bit in the private and public records, beyond what you showed me on the crossing."
"We didn't care to overwhelm you with irrelevant details," Baskin said, returning to his seat.
"But there was never anything we sought to hide from you. I welcome your curiosity. You can't be too well prepared in advance of your operation."
"The background is complicated, isn't it? Centuries of dissident or breakaway factions, skulking around the edges of your war, shifting from one ideology to another, sometimes loosely aligned with your side, sometimes with the enemy, at times numerous, at other times pushed almost to extinction. I was interested in their leader, Struxa."
"There's little to say about him."
"Oh, I don't know." Merlin fingered his glass, knowing he had the edge for now. "He was one of yours, wasn't he? A military defector, a senior tactician in his own right. Close to your inner circle, almost a favoured son. But instead of offering his services to the other side, he teamed up with the brigands on Mundar. From what I can gather, there are Gefurian defectors as well. What do they all want, do you think? What persuades those men and women that they're better off working together than against each other?"
They stole the tactician Merlin. Remember that? A military weapon in all but name. Hardly the actions of untainted pacifists. Behind Baskin, the doors opened as Teal came to join them. Baskin twisted around in his seat to greet her, nodding in admiration at the satin Havergal evening wear she had donned for the meal. It suited her well, Merlin thought, but what really mattered was the distraction it offered. While Baskin's attention was diverted, Merlin quickly swapped their glasses. He'd been careful to drink to the same level as Baskin, so that the subterfuge wasn't obvious. "I was just telling Prince Baskin the good news," Merlin said, lifting the swapped glass and taking a careful sip from it. "I'm satisfied about the authenticity of the Syrinx." Teal took her place at the table. Baskin leaned across to pour her a glass. "Merlin said you were feeling a little unwell, so I wasn't counting on you joining us at all."
"It was just a turn, Prince. I'm feeling much better now."
"Good. Good." He was looking at her intently, a frown buried in his gaze. "You know, Teal, if I didn't know you'd just come from space, I'd swear you were..." But he smiled at himself, dismissing whatever thought he had been about to voice. "Never mind. It was a foolish notion. I trust you'll accept our hospitality, while Merlin discharges his side of the arrangement. I know you travelled together, but on this occasion at least, Merlin has no need of an interpreter. There'll be no negotiation, simply a demonstration of overwhelming and decisive force. They'll understand what it is we'd like back."
"Where he goes, I go,"
Teal said. Merlin tensed, his fingers tight on the glass. "It might not be a bad idea, actually. There'll be a risk, a small one, I grant, but a risk nonetheless. Tyrant isn't indestructible, and I'll be restricted in the weapons I can deploy, if the prince wants his toy back in one piece. I'd really rather handle this one on my own."
"I accept the risk," she said. "And not because I care about the tactician, or the difference it will make to this system. But I do want to see the Huskers defeated, and for that, Merlin needs his Syrinx."
"I'd have been happy to give it to Merlin now, if I thought your remaining on Havergal would offer a guarantee of his return. But the opposite arrangement suits me just as well. As soon as we have the tactician, we'll release the Syrinx." "If those are your terms," Merlin said, with an easygoing shrug. Baskin smiled slightly.
"You trust me?"
"I trust the capability of my ship to enforce a deal. It amounts to the same thing." "A pragmatist? I knew you were the right man for the job, Merlin." Merlin lifted his glass. "To success, in that case." Baskin followed suit, and Teal raised her own glass in half-hearted sympathy. "To success," the prince echoed, "and victory." They left the facility the following morning. Merlin took Tyrant this time, Teal joining him as they followed Renouncer back into space. Once the two craft were clear of Havergal's atmosphere, Prince Baskin issued a request for docking authorization. Merlin, who had considered his business with the prince concluded for now, viewed the request with a familiar nagging trepidation. "He wants to come along for the ride," he murmured to Teal, while the airlock cycled. "Force and wisdom, that's exactly what it'll be. Needs to see Strux's poor brigands getting their noses bloodied up close and personal, rather than hearing about it from halfway across the system." Teal looked unimpressed. "If he wants to risk his neck, who are you to stop him?"
"Oh, nobody at all. It's just that I work best without an audience."
"We've already got one, Merlin. Start getting used to it." He shrugged aside her point. He was distracted to begin with, thinking of the glass he had smuggled out of the dining room, and whether Prince Baskin had been sharp enough to notice the swap. While they were leaving Havergal, he had put the glass into Tyrant's full-spectrum analyzer, but the preliminary results were not quite what he'd been expecting. "I wasn't kidding about the risks, you know," Merlin said. "Nor was I about wanting to see you get the syrinx, and not because I care about you all that much, either." He winced. "Don't feel you need to spare my feelings. I'm just stating my position. You're the means to an end. You're searching for the means to bring about the destruction of the Huskers. The syrinx is necessary for that search, and therefore I'll help you find it. But if there was a way of not involving you..." "And I thought we broke some ice back there, with all that stuff about Tyrs and your daughter." "It didn't matter then. It doesn't matter now. Not in the slightest." Merlin eyed the lock indicator. "It isn't as clear-cut as I thought, did you know? I swiped a gene sample from his lordship. Now, if your blood had been percolating its way down the family tree the way it ought to have been, then I should have seen a very strong correlation." "Wait," she said, face hardening as she worked through the implications of that statement. "You took a sample from him? What about me, Merlin? How did you get a look at my genes without..." "I sampled you." Teal slapped him. There had been no warning, and she only hit him the once, and for a moment afterwards, it might almost have been possible to pretend that nothing had happened. So exactly had they returned to their earlier stances. But Merlin's cheek stung like a vacuum burn. He opened his mouth, trying to think of something that would explain away her anger. The lock opened. Prince Baskin came aboard Tyrant, wearing his armoured spacesuit with the helmet tucked under one arm. "There'll be no objections, Merlin. My own ship couldn't keep pace with Tyrant, even if I wished to shadow you. So the simplest option is to join you for the operation." He raised a gently silencing hand before Merlin, still stung, had a chance to interject. "I'll be along purely as an observer. Someone with local knowledge, if it comes to that. You don't need to lecture me on the dangers. I've seen my share of frontline service, as you doubtless know, having made yourself such an expert on royal affairs." He nodded. "Yes, we tracked your search patterns, while you were, supposedly, verifying the authenticity of the syrinx. I wanted to know everything I could about your contact with the cohort mission. That and more, I think." Baskin mouthed a command into his neck ring, and Renouncer detached from the lock. "None of it concerns me, though, Merlin. If it amused you to sift through our many assassinations and constitutional crises, so be it. All that matters to me is the safe return of the tactician, and I will insist on being witness to that return. Don't insult me by suggesting that the presence of one more human on this ship will have any bearing on Tyrant's capabilities. It's not a taxi, but it is spacious enough for our present needs, and that is all that matters." He nodded at Teal. "Besides, I was enjoying our evening conversations too much to forego the pleasure." "All right," Merlin said, sighing. "You're along for the ride, Prince, but I make the decisions. And if I feel like pulling out of this arrangement for any reason, I'll do just that." Prince Baskin set his helmet aside and offered his empty palms. "There'll be no coercion, Merlin. I could hardly force you into doing anything you disliked, could I? So long as we agree on that." Merlin gestured to the suite of cabins aft of the lock. "Teal, Show him the ropes, will you? I've got some navigation to be getting on with. We'll push to 1G in 30 minutes. Merlin turned his back on Teal and the Prince and returned to Tyrant's command deck. He watched the dwindling trace of the renouncer, knowing he could outpace it with ease. There would be a certain attraction in cutting and running right now, hoping that the old Syrinx held together long enough for a Waynet transition, and seeing Baskin's face when he realised he would not be returning to Havergal for centuries, if at all. But while Merlin was capable of many regrettable things, spite was not one of his failings. His gaze slid to the results from the analyzer. He thought of running the sequence again, using the same traces from the wine glass, but the arrival of the prince rendered that earlier sample of doubtful value. Perhaps it had been contaminated to begin with by other members of the royal staff. But now that Baskin was aboard, Tyrant could obtain a perfect genetic readout almost without trying. The words of Baskin returned to mind, as if they held some significance Merlin could not yet see for himself. If it amused you to sift through our many assassinations and constitutional crises, so be it. Assassinations. When Merlin was satisfied that Prince Baskin's bones were up to the strain, he pushed Tyrant to 2Gs. It was uncomfortable for all of them, but bearable provided they kept to the lounge and avoided moving around too much. "We could go faster," Merlin said, as if it was no great achievement. "But we'd be putting out a little more exotic radiation than I'd like, and I'd rather not broadcast our intentions too strongly. Besides, 2Gs will get us to Mundar in plenty of time, and if you find it uncomfortable, we can easily dial down the thrust for a little while." "You make light of this capability," Prince Baskin said, his hand trembling slightly as he lifted a drinking vessel to his lips. "Yet this ship is thousands of years beyond anything possessed by either side in our system." Merlin tried to look sympathetic. "Maybe if you weren't busy throwing rocks at each other, you could spend a little time on the other niceties of life, such as cooperation and mutual advancement." "We will," Baskin affirmed. "I'll bend my life to it. I'm not a zealot for war. If I felt that there was a chance of a negotiated ceasefire, under terms amicable to both sides, I'd have seized it years ago. But our ideological differences are too great, our mutual grievances too ingrained. Sometimes I even think to myself that it wouldn't matter who wins, just as long as one side prevails over the other. There are reasonable men and women in Gefurious. It's just..." But he trailed off, as if even he viewed this line of argument as treasonable. "If you thought that way," Teal said, "the simplest thing would be to let the enemy win. Give them the Iron Tactician, if you think it will make that much difference." "After all our advances? No. It's too late for that sort of idealism. Besides, we aren't dealing with Gefurious. It's the brigands who are holding us to ransom." "Face it," Merlin said. "For all this talk of peace, of victory, you'd miss the war." "I wouldn't. I'm not so sure. You used to play at battle, didn't you? Toy soldiers and tabletop military campaigns, you said. It's been in your blood from the moment you took your first breath. You were the boy who dreamed of war." "I changed," Baskin said. "Saw through those old distractions. I spoke of Lurga, didn't I? The last and greatest of our surface cities. Before the abandonment, my home was Lurga's Imperial Palace, a building that was itself as grand as some cities. I often walk it in my dreams, Merlin, but that's where it belongs now, back in my childhood, along with all those toy soldiers. Lurga must have been something to see, Merlin said. Oh, it was. We built and rebuilt. They couldn't bear it, of course, the enemy. That's why Lurga was always the focus of their attacks, right until the end. There was a bad one once, wasn't there? Merlin asked. Too many to mention. I mean, a particularly bad one. A direct strike against the palace itself. It's in your public history. I noticed it while I was going through your open records on Havergal. You'd have been 6 or 7 at the time, so you'd easily remember it. An assassination attempt, plainly. The Gefurians were trying to bite the head off the Havergal ruling elite. It was bad, yes. I was injured, quite seriously, by the collapse of part of the palace. Trapped alone and in the dark for days, until rescue squads broke through. I recovered, obviously, but it's a painful episode, and not one I care to dwell on. Good people died around me, Merlin. No child should have to see that. I couldn't agree more. Perhaps it was the breaking of me, in the end, Baskin said. Until then, I'd only known war as a series of distant triumphs. Glorious victories and downplayed defeats. After the attack, I knew what blood looked like up close. I healed well enough, but only after months of recuperation. And when I returned to my studies and some engagement with public life, I found that I'd begun to lose my taste for war. I look back on that little boy that I once was, so single-mindedly consumed by war and strategy, and almost wonder if I'm the same person. He set aside his drinking vessel, rubbing at the sore muscles in his arm. You'll forgive me, both of you. I feel in need of rest. Our ships can only sustain this sort of acceleration for a few tens of minutes, not hour after hour. It's hard on us all, Merlin said, feeling a glimmer of empathy for his unwanted guest. And you're right about one thing, Prince. I want an end to the war with the Huskers, but not at any cost. When they were alone, Teal said, You've got some explaining to do. If it wasn't for Baskin, I'd have forced it out of you with torture by now. I'm glad you didn't. All that screaming would have made our guest distinctly uncomfortable. And have you ever tried getting blood out of upholstery? Merlin flashed a smile, but Teal's hard mask of an expression told him she was in no mood for banter. Why were you so interested in his genetic profile? There were sealed doors between the lounge and the quarters assigned to the prince, but the ship was silent under normal operation, and Merlin found himself glancing around and lowering his voice before answering. I just wanted peace of mind, Teal. I just thought that if I could find a genetic match between you and Prince Baskin, it would settle things for good, allow you to put your mind to rest about Cupis. Put my mind to rest? I know I shouldn't have sampled you without your permission. It was just some hair left on your pillow, with skin flakes. Merlin silenced himself. Now that we're aboard, the ship can run a profile just by sequencing the cells it picks up through the normal air circulation filters. Teal still had her arm out, her look defiant. But slowly she pulled back the arm and slid her sleeve back down. Run your damned tests. You've started this, you may as well finish it. Are you sure, Teal? It may not get us any nearer an answer of what happened to your bloodline. I said, finish it. Teal answered. Tyrant slipped across the system, into the contested space between the two stars. Battle continued to rage across a dozen worlds, and countless more moons, minor planets, and asteroids. Fleets were engaging on a dozen simultaneous fronts, their energy bursts spangling the night sky across light hours of distance. Every radio channel crackled with military traffic, encrypted signals, blatant propaganda, screams of help or mercy from stricken crews. Tyrant steered clear of the worst of it, but even as they approached Mundar, Merlin picked out more activity than he had hoped for. Gifurian patrol groups were swinging suspiciously close to the brigand's asteroid, as if something had begun to attract their interest. So far, they were keeping clear of the predicted defence perimeter, but their presence put Merlin on edge. It didn't help that the Gifurian incursions were drawing a counter-response from Havergal squadrons. The nearest battlefronts were still light minutes away, but the last thing Merlin needed was a new combat zone opening up right where he had business of his own. "I was hoping for a clear theatre of action," he told Baskin. "Something nice and quiet, where I could do my business without a lot of messy distractions." "Gafurian security may have picked up rumours about the tactician by this point," Baskin said. "And that wasn't worth sharing with me before now."
"I said rumours, Merlin, not hard intelligence. Or they may just be taking a renewed interest in the brigands. They're as much a thorn in the enemy's side as they are in ours. I like them more and more."
They were a day out when Merlin risked a quick snoop with Tyrant's long-range sensors. Baskin and Teal were on the command deck as the scans refreshed and updated, overlaid with the intelligence schematics Merlin had already examined on the Renouncer. Mundar was a fuzzy rock traced through with the equally ghostly fault lines of shafts, corridors, internal pressure vaults, and weapons emplacements. "That was a risky thing to do," Baskin said, while Teal nodded her agreement.
"If they picked up anything," Merlin said, "it would have been momentary, and on a spread of frequencies and particle bands they wouldn't normally expect. They'll put it down to sensor malfunctions and move on. I wish I had your confidence."
Merlin stretched out his hands and cracked his knuckles, as if he were preparing to climb a wall. "Let's think like Struxer. He's got his claws on something precious, a one-off machine, so chances are he won't put the tactician anywhere vulnerable, especially with these patrol groups sniffing around."
"How does that help us?"
"Because it narrows down his options. That deep vault there, do you think it would suit?"
"Perhaps.
The main thing is to declare our intentions. To give Struxer an unambiguous idea of your capabilities." Baskin danced his own finger across the display. "You'll open with a decisive but pinpoint attack, enough to shake them up, and let them know we absolutely mean business. At what distance can you launch a strike?"
"We'll be in optimum charm torp range in about 6 hours. I can lock in the targeting solutions now, if you like, but we'll have a sharper view of Mundar the nearer we get."
"Would they be able to see us that soon?" Teal asked. Merlin was irritated by the question, but only because it had been the next thing on his mind.
"From what we understand of your ship's sensor footprint, they'll be able to pick you out inside a volume of radius 1.5 light seconds. That's an estimate, though. Their weapons will be kinetic launchers, pulse beams, drone missiles. Can you deal with that sort of thing?"
"Provided I'm not having a bad day."
Baskin extended his own finger at the scans, wavering under the effort. "These cratered emplacements are most likely the sites of their kinetic batteries, I suggest a surgical strike against all of them, including the ones around the other side of Mundar. Can you do it? 12 charm torps should take care of them, which is handy, because that's all I've got left. We'll still have the Gamma cannons and the Nova mine launches if things get sticky. If I know Structure, they will. Something twitched in Baskin's cheek, some nervous, betraying tick. But the deaths will be all on his side, not ours. If that's the cost of enforcing peace, so be it. Merlin eyed him carefully. I've never been very good with that sort of calculus. None of us like it, Baskin said. Teal went off to catch some sleep until they approached the attack threshold. Merlin grabbed a few hours as well, but his rest was fitful, and he soon found himself returning to the command deck, watching as the scans slowly sharpened, and their view of Mundar grew more precise. Tyrant was using passive senses now, but these were already improving on the earlier active snapshot. Merlin was understandably on edge, though. They were backing toward the asteroid, and if there was ever a chance of their exhaust emissions being picked up, now was the time. Merlin had done what he could, trading deceleration efficiency for a constantly altering thrust angle that ought to provide maximum cover, but nothing was guaranteed. "I thought I'd find you here," Baskin said, pinching at the corners of his eyes as he entered the room. "You've barely slept since we left Havergal, have you?" "You don't look much more refreshed, Prince." "I know. I saw myself in the mirror just now. Sometimes when I look at my own portrait, I barely recognise myself. I think I can be excused a little anxiety, though. So much depends on the next few hours, Merlin. I think these may be the most critical hours of my entire career. My entire life, even." Merlin waited until the prince had taken his seat, folding his bones with care. "You mentioned Struxer back there." "Did I?" "The intelligence briefings told me very little, Prince. Even the confidential files I lifted from your sealed archives on Havergal. But you spoke as if you knew the man. Struxer was one of us. That was never any sort of secret. A senior tactician, that's what I was told. That sounds like quite a high-up role to me. Struxer wasn't just some anonymous military minion, was he?" After a moment, Baskin said, "He was known to me. As, of course, were all the high-ranking strategists. Was Struxer involved in the tactician?" If Baskin meant to hide his hesitation, he did a poor job of it. "To a degree. The tactician required a large staff, not just to coordinate the feeding in of intelligence data, but to analyse and act on the results. The battle computers I mentioned. But Struxer was close to it all, wasn't he?" Merlin was guessing now, relying on hard-won intuition. But Baskin's reactions were all he needed to know he was on the right track. "He worked closely with the computer. His defection was regrettable. If you can call it a defection. That would depend on what those brigands actually want, wouldn't it? And no one's been terribly clear on that with me." Baskin's face was strained. "They're against peace. Is there anything more you need to know?" Merlin smiled, content with that line of questioning for now. "Prince, might I ask you something else? You know I took an interest in your constitutional history when we were on Havergal. Assassinations are commonplace, aren't they? There was that time when almost the entire ruling house of Havergal was wiped out in one strike. That was 12 or 13 centuries ago. But only a little after the visitation of the Shrike. That was why it caught my eye. No other reason, Should there be? Don't play games with me, Merlin. You'll always lose. I was the boy who dreamed of war, remember?
The door behind them opened. It was Teal, awake sooner than Merlin had expected. Her face had a freshly scrubbed look, her hair wetted down.
Are we close?
About 30 minutes out, Merlin said. Buckle in, Teal. It could get interesting from any point onwards, especially if their senses are a little better than the prince believes.
Teal slipped into the vacant seat, befitting her cohort training. She had adapted well to the 2 G's, moving around Tyrant with a confident, sinewy ease.
Have you run that genetic scan again? She asked.
I have, Merlin said. And I came up with the same result, only at a higher confidence level.
Do you want to tell him, or should I?
Tell me what? Baskin asked.
There's a glitch in your family tree, Merlin said, then nodded at Teal for her to continue.
I've already been to your world, she said, delivering the words with a defiant and brazen confidence. I was on the diplomatic party, aboard the swallow ship Shrike. I was with them when they sold you the Syrinx.
Before he had a chance to voice his disbelief, she said,
A little later, our ship ran into trouble in a nearby system. The Huskers took us, wrecked the ship, but left just enough of us alive to suffer. We went into Frostwatch, those of us who remained. And one by one we died, when the Frostwatch failed. I was the last living survivor. Then Merlin found me, and we returned to your system. You know this to be possible, Prince. You know of Frostwatch, of near-light travel, of time compression.
I suppose, he said.
But there's more to it than that, Teal went on. My daughter stayed on Havergal. She became Cupis, Queen Cupis, after Tyrs was promoted to the throne. You said it yourself, Prince. There was something in my face you thought you recognised. It's your own lineage, your own family tree.
Except it isn't quite, Merlin said. You see, you're not related, and you should be. I ran a genetic crossmatch between the two of you on Havergal, and another since you've been on Tyrant. Both say there's no correlation, which is odd, given the family tree. But I think there's a fairly simple explanation.
Baskin glanced from Merlin to Teal and back to Merlin, his eyes wide, doubting and slightly fearful.
Which would be?
You're not Prince Baskin, Merlin said. You just think you are.
Don't be absurd. My entire life has been lived in the public eye, subject to the harshest scrutiny.
Merlin did his best not to sound too callous, nor give the impression that he took any pleasure in disclosing what he now knew to be the truth.
There's no doubt, I'm afraid. If you were really of royal blood, I'd know it. The only question is, where along your family tree the birth line was broken, and why? And I think I know the answer to that, as well.
The console chimed. Merlin turned to it with irritation, but a glance told him that the ship had every reason to demand his attention. A signal was beaming out at them, straight from Mundar.
That isn't possible, Baskin said. We're still 3 light seconds out, much too far for their sensors.
Teal said, Perhaps you should see what it says. The transmission used local protocols, but it only took an instant for Tyrant to unscramble the packets and resolve them into a video signal. A man's head appeared above the console, backdropped by a roughly hewn wall of pale rock. Merlin recognised the face as belonging to Struxer, but only because he had paid close attention to the intelligence briefings. Otherwise, it would have been easy to miss the similarities. This Struxer was thinner of face, somehow more delicate of bone structure, older and wearier looking than the cold-eyed defector Merlin had been expecting. He started speaking in a high, steady voice, babbling out a string of words in the Havergal tongue. Tyrant was listening in, but it would be a little while before it could offer a reliable translation. Merlin turned to Teal. "What's he saying?"
"I'm just as capable of telling you," Baskin said.
Merlin nodded. "But I'd sooner hear it from Teal." "He's got a fix on you," she said, frowning slightly as she caught up with the stream of words. "Says he's had a lark since the moment you were silly enough to turn those scanning systems onto Mondar. Says you must have thought they were idiots to miss something that obvious. Also, that we're not as stealthy as we think we are, judging by the ease with which he's tracking our engine signature."
"You fool," Baskin hissed. "I told you it was a risk."
"He says he knows what our intentions are," Teal went on. "But no matter how much force you throw at them, they're not going to relinquish the Iron Tactician. He says to turn back now and avoid unnecessary violence." Merlin gritted teeth.
"Chip, get ready to send a return transmission using the same channel and protocols. Teal, you're doing the talking. Tell Struxer I've no axe to grind with him or his brigands, and if we can do this without bloodshed, no one will be happier than me. Also, that I can take apart that asteroid as easily as if it's a piece of rotten fruit." Baskin gave a thin smile, evidently liking Merlin's tone.
"Belligerent enough for you, was it?" Merlin asked, while Teal leaned in and translated Merlin's reply.
"Threats and force are what they understand," Baskin said. It took 3 seconds for Teal's statement to reach Mondar, and another 3 for Struxer's response to find its way back to Tyrant. They listened to what he had to say, Merlin needing no translator to tell him that Struxer's answer was a great deal more strident than before.
"You can forget about them handing it over without a struggle," Teal said.
"And he says that we'd be very wise not to put Mundar's armaments to the test, now that the Iron Tactician's coordinating its own defence plans. They've got every weapon on that asteroid hooked directly into the Tactician, and they're prepared to let it protect itself."
"They'd still be outgunned," Merlin said. But even he couldn't quite disguise the profound unease he was beginning to feel.
"It's a bluff," Baskin said. "The Tactician has no concept of its own self-preservation."
"Can you be sure?"
Teal asked.
"Tell Struxer this," Merlin said. "Surrender the Iron Tactician, and I won't lay a finger on that asteroid. All they have to do is bring it to the surface. My proctors can take care of the rest."
Teal relayed the statement. Struxer barked back his answer, which was monosyllabic enough to require no translation.
"He says if we want it, we should try taking it," Teal said.
Merlin nodded. He had been expecting as much, but it had seemed worth his while to make one last concession at a negotiated settlement.
"Chip, give me manual fire control on the torp racks. We're a little further out than I'd like, but it'll give me time to issue a warning. I'm taking out those kinetic batteries."
"You have control, Merlin," Tyrant said.
Baskin asked, "Are you sure it isn't too soon?"
Merlin gave his reply by means of issuing the firing command. Tyrant pushed out its ventral weapons racks, and the charm torps sped away with barely a twitch of recoil.
only a pattern of moving nodes on the targeting display gave any real hint that the weapons had been deployed.
"Torps, armed and running," Tyrant said.
"Teal, tell them they have a strike on its way. They've got a few minutes to move their people deeper into the asteroid, if they aren't already there. My intention is to disable their defences, not to take lives. Make sure Struxer understands that." Teal was in the middle of delivering her message when Tyrant jolted violently and without warning. It was a sideways impulse, harsh enough to bruise bones. And for a moment, Merlin could only stare at the displays, as shocked as he had been when Teal had slapped him across the face. Then there was another jolt, in the opposite direction, and he understood.
"Evasive response in progress," Tyrant said. "Normal safety thresholds suspended. Manual override available, but not recommended."
"What?"
Baskin grimaced.
"We're being shot at," Merlin said. Tyrant was taking sharp, evasive manoeuvres, corkscrewing hard, even as it was still engaged in a breakneck deceleration.
"Impossible. We're still too far out."
"There's nothing coming at us from Mundar. It's something else. Some perimeter defence screen we didn't even know about." He directed a reproachful look at Baskin.
"I mean, that you didn't know about?"
"Single-use kinetics, perhaps," Baskin said. "Free-floating sentries. I should be seeing the activation pulses. Electromagnetic and optical burst signatures. I'm not. All I'm seeing are the slugs, just before they hit us." They were, as far as Tyrant could tell, simply inert slugs of dense matter, lacking guidance or warheads. They were falling into detection range just in time to compute and execute an evasion, but the margins were awfully fine.
"There are such things as dark kinetics," Baskin said. "They're a prototype weapon system, mirrored and cloaked to conceal the launch pulse. But Struxer's brigands have nothing in their arsenal like that. Even if they had a local manufacturing capability, they wouldn't have the skills to make their own versions."
"Would the tactician know about those weapons?" Teal asked.
"In its catalogue of military assets, yes. But there's a world of difference between knowing of something and being able to direct the duplication and manufacture of that technology."
"Tell that to your toy," Merlin murmured. He hoped it was his imagination, but the violent counter-manoeuvres seemed to be coming more rapidly, as if Tyrant was having an increasingly difficult time steering between the projectiles.
"Chip, recall 6 of the charm torps. Bring them back as quickly as you can."
"What good will that do?" Baskin snapped. "You should be hitting them with everything you've got, not pulling your punch at the last minute."
"We need the torps to give us an escort screen," Merlin said. "The other 6 can still deal with all the batteries on the visible face."
It had been rash to commit all 12 in one go, he now knew, born of an arrogant assumption as to his own capabilities. But he had realised his mistake in time.
"Struxer, again," Teal said.
"He says it's only going to get worse, and we should call off the other missiles and give up on our attack. Says if he sees a clear indication of our exhaust, he'll stand down the defence screen."
"Carry on," Baskin said.
"Charm torps on return profile," Tyrant said. "Shall I deploy racks for recovery?"
"No. Group the torps in a protective cordon around us, close enough that you can interdict any slugs that you can't steer us past, and put in a reminder to me to upgrade our attack countermeasures."
"Complying. The remaining 6 torps are now being reassigned to the 6 visible targets. Impact in
20 seconds.
Struck, sir, Merlin said, not feeling that his words needed any translation.
Get your people out of those batteries!
A sudden blue brightness pushed through Tyrant's windows, just before they shuttered tight in response.
Slug interdicted, the ship said calmly. One torp depleted from defence cordon. 5 remaining.
Spare me the countdown, Merlin said. Just get us through this mess and out the other side.
The 6 remaining charm torps of the attack formation closed in on Mundar in the same instant, clawing like a 6-taloned fist, gouging 6 star-hot wounds into the asteroid's crust, 6 swelling spheres of heat and destruction that grew and dimmed until they merged at their boundaries. Merlin, studying the readouts, could only swallow in horror and awe, reminded again of the potency of even modest cohort weaponry. Megatons of rock and dust were boiling off the asteroid, even as he watched, like a skull bleeding out from 6 eye sockets. 3 of the cordon torps were lost before Tyrant began to break free into relatively safe space. But by then, Merlin's luck was stretching perilously thin. The torps could interdict the slugs for almost any range of approach vectors, but not always safely. If the impact happened close enough to Tyrant, that was not much better than a direct hit. They were through then, but not without cost. The hull had taken a battering from 2 of the nearer detonations, and while none of the damage would ordinarily been of concern, Merlin had been counting on having a ship in optimum condition. Limping away to effect repairs was scarcely an option now. The consolation, if he needed one, was that Mundar had taken a much worse battering.
Is Struxer still sending?
Merlin asked.
He's trying, Teal said.
Struxer's face appeared, but speckled by interference. He looked strained, glancing either side of him as he made his statement. Teal listened carefully.
He says they've still got weapons, if we dare to come any nearer. His position hasn't changed.
Mine has, Merlin said. Ship, send in the remaining torps, dialed to maximum yield. Strike at the existing impact sites. See if we can't open some fracture planes, or punch our way deep inside.
Then he enlarged the asteroid's schematic, and began tapping his finger against some of the secondary installations on the surface. What the intelligence dossiers said were weapons, sensor pods, airlocks.
Ready Nova mines for dispersal. Spread pattern 3. We'll pick off any moving targets with the gamma cannon.
Teal said, if you hit Struxer's antenna, you'll take away our means of communicating.
I'm past the point of negotiation, Teal. My ship's wounded, and I take that personally. If you want to send a last message to Struxer, tell him he had his chance to play nicely.
Baskin leaned forward in his seat restraints. Don't do anything too rash, Merlin. We came to force his hand, not to annihilate the entire asteroid.
Your primary consideration was stopping the tactician falling into the wrong hands. I'm about to guarantee that never happens.
I want it intact.
It was never going to work, Prince. There was never going to be any magic piece, just because you had your battle computer back.
A sudden indignation passed through him.
I know wars. I know how they play out. Squeeze the enemy hard, and they just find new ways to fight back. It'll go on, and you'll never be any nearer victory.
We were winning.
One tide was going out. Another was due to come back in. That's all it was.
The charm torps were striking. Set to their highest explosive setting,
The bursts were 20 times brighter than the first wave. Each fireball scooped out a tenth of the asteroid's volume, lofting unthinkable quantities of rock and dirt and gas into space. A ghastly swelling shroud, lit from within by pulses of lightning.